First witness, Jane Edwards, and the operation director. Jane?
Chairman, is that what's called a carpetbagger there?
Senator Simmons, I'll get to that. That's a ledger. It's how we calculate fees. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jane Edwards. I'm the Corporation Commissioner. Let me try to summarize my testimony. Briefly, what House Bill 2223 does is simplify our fees. It does not increase revenue. Right now, we have a very, very complicated fee structure that we have to administer. And as a result of that, we're using staff time to handle fee problems that could be better used to improve service. We, in the Corporation Division, Business Registry Section, process thousands of documents which are necessary to create corporations, limited partnerships, business trusts, register assumed business names, and trademarks. We've been working very hard to improve the service, get our phones answered, get the documents turned around quickly. This bill will help us do it. Right now, our fees do not relate to the work involved in processing documents, nor to the ability to pay. They generate about twice as much revenue as it costs to operate our program. This money goes to the general fund. Approximately 25% of the documents submitted to us include the wrong fee. This means we have to place a document in suspense, ask for more money, or process a refund. One of the worst features of our current fee structure is that if documents, reports that are required annually of corporations are submitted late, even a day late, there's a $20 penalty. It's been the subject of many telephone calls and concerns expressed by members of the legislature. Our corporation fees were established 50 years ago. They are based on authorized capital, which is established by the corporation. They were established at a time when there was no corporate income tax, and it was thought this was a way of taxing large corporations. In fact, the corporation itself can manipulate things so that they can pay the minimum fee, and I'll go through that a little bit more. In addition, we have many, many kinds of documents we file. Everyone has a different fee for filing, for renewals. We also have fees for amendments, for mergers, for dissolutions, all of which are different. What the bill does is eliminate penalties for late filing. Instead, we send a second notice. It standardizes all fees for domestic business corporations for $15 filing and $15 renewal. It standardizes fees for all nonprofit corporations to 10 and 5. Standardized fees for limited partnerships and business trusts to $50 filing and $50 renewal. Standardized fees for foreign corporations, that is, out-of-state entities doing business in Oregon, which tend to be more affluent, to a $200 filing fee and a $200 renewal fee. Now the fees vary from $25 to $200. Eliminates all supplementary fees for filing amendments, mergers, and whatnot. And it makes a flat dollar amount for our automation surcharge. And finally, continues current fees for assumed business name and trademarks. The bill has passed the Ways and Means Committee unanimously and passed the House 57-0. And what I've given you is a little chart.
Pardon me, Jane. Did you say it passed the Ways and Means?
Yes, sir. It was initially assigned to the Ways and Means Committee and was reviewed by a subcommittee, then passed by the full committee, and then was passed by the House and assigned to this committee. It does now, again, have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
It still does have a subsequent referral?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
Take a minute, and I've got a chart which looks like this, which will compare the existing fees to the proposed fees. This chart is long because our fees are complicated. Let me tell you, our basic fee is the filing fee for corporations when somebody wants to start a new corporation in Oregon. Right now, that's based on authorized capital. That means they have to take the number of shares times the par value, multiply that out, find where they are in this grid, and then develop the fee. That can be from $10 to $200. Clever Corporation makes their par value, which they assign themselves, very low. They can make it 0.001, and therefore they can end up at the $10 fee. If they're not paying as much attention, they might end up at $200. Okay. What we propose is to be a flat $15 fee. Most corporations are paying about $10 to $20 range now, so that puts it right in the middle. I'm going to say this was reviewed by Ike Completon from the Association of Oregon Industries. He had some concerns when we originally proposed it and agreed to this approach, which is a 15 and 15. We also have cooperative corporations have a different fee than business corporations. We standardize those at 15. District improvement are now related at $2 per 1,000 acres. We standardize those. Business trusts and limited partnerships under this would be $50 filing fee. Currently, business trusts are 50, but limited partnerships are 25. Let me say that particularly limited partnerships tend to be big entities. They're designed to raise capital. They also do a lot of amendments, and they're going to save on the other end because we eliminate the amendment fee. I can go through these if you like, fee by fee, but I think you can see what we're going to standardize. And the first phase is the filing fee, second page is renewal fees, and then the last page are other miscellaneous fees. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Members of the committee?
Mr. Chair, assume business name fee is $5 plus $1 per county. And below that it says minimum fee, maximum fee. Does that refer to an assumed business name or is that...
Yes, Senator Simmons, we're just trying to display, if there's one county, you would pay $6.50. That's the lowest you could do. If you file your name and list all the counties in the state that you're doing business, you'd pay $59, which is 36 times 150 plus the 5. And that's what
should be $5 plus $1.50 per county, that should
be. Yes, sir.
It says a dollar.
Well, that's an error, and I apologize.
That didn't add up.
Yes, I'm glad you caught that. One of the earlier versions of this had them as all our county, but it was amended and went back to $1.50. Yes, and we ran this out on a computer and we didn't clean that up. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else care to testify on House Bill 2223? Close the hearing. I'd entertain a motion to send it to Ways and Means.
So moved.
Senator Simmons moves House Bill 2223 to the Ways and Means Committee. Discussion. Call the roll, please.
Senator Dane, Senator Frye.
Aye.
Senator Simmons.
Aye.
Senator Otto.
Aye.
Senator Paul.
Okay. Now open the hearing on House Bill 2224. You might as well stay right there. I think you signed up for that.
Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with Chapter 59, which is a bill that regulates the sale of securities in Oregon. It was worked on extensively by attorneys and members of the investment community, made a number of recommendations which were incorporated into this bill. Essentially, Oregon law defines security as a situation where I give money to somebody else and I depend on their efforts to make a profit. It's a rather broad definition. And our office regulates securities in three ways. We register the securities, we investigate cases of alleged violation of the securities laws, and we license securities professionals. We have a very small staff that does all of this work, consisting of 8 professional staff, a paralegal, a half-time law clerk, and 3 clerical support staff. We want to use our resources carefully. And what this bill does is clarifies a number of exemptions that now exist from the registration requirements of the Oregon law. As I said, when you sell a security, you're required to give adequate disclosures so the purchaser knows what they are buying. There are several exemptions from the law in cases where the legislature has determined that something should not be registered. And a recent example is a bill that was passed from this committee in the Senate exempting fishing co-ops and small grocery co-ops. This bill does not change the disclosure requirements, but what it does do is define better the exemption. The most important one relates to small businesses. There is now no practical exemption for a small business from registering the securities. Every day, many people come into our office, they file articles of incorporation, they sell a few shares of stock to their friends and relatives. They are doing this in violation of the Oregon securities law. They don't know that they're doing that. But the law now says they can only make offers to 10. So if they make offers to 11 people and sell to one, that's illegal. It also says they have to give us a notice 5 days before they make the offers. Most of them don't know that. What the bill would do is allow 10 sales, but it would restrict those. There could be no commission paid, no public advertising. The effect would be that there would not be an incentive for fraud, but the small businesses could raise capital easily without going through a very expensive registration process. The bill also does several other things. It gives us a rulemaking authority that we need for some flexibility. It extends the statute of limitations in private actions involved in fraud, which is now 3 years. It would extend it to 2 years from the time the person discovered or should have discovered the fraud, or 3 years. It changes the interest rate paid in a private action, which is now 6%. It corresponds to the legal rate of interest. It allows us, increases our fining power a little bit. We now can fine a person who has a license that violates the law, but not somebody that does not have a license. Often, when we start investigating somebody, they give up their license, and then they're in effect precluded from fining them. Finally, the bill makes it a little bit easier for licensees to obtain a bond. They are now required to post a corporate surety bond of $10,000. Some of them had trouble getting there. We would allow them, through rule, we would allow them to place, say, a cash bond or irrevocable letter of credit, something equivalent that would be easier for them. The bill has passed the House Committee of Consumer Business Affairs and passed the House 59-0. Tom Agashi is the deputy commissioner, has a section-by-section analysis. We can distribute and answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Did the security section of the State Bar study this bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fry, members of that section did. The task force that proposed many of these changes was chaired by Bob Stout, who's a securities attorney. We also had Steve Wynn, Peggy Noto, many people that are very involved in securities. Peggy Noto was the legislative chairman for the security section. She testified before the House committee in favor of it, and they spent a lot of time on it.
More? Senator Fry?
No, I don't at this moment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Simmons.
Yes, Mr. Chair. On page 6 of your testimony, what is the bond required for? Not every corporation.
No, I'm sorry.
Post a bond.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Simmons, this is only for people that are licensed. They can be licensed either the broker-dealer, the security salesperson, or investment advisor. They have to now post a $10,000. The statute language is corporate surety bond. It's fragmented. They get those from insurance companies.
So the licensee refers to someone who is actually in the security business.
Yes, that's correct.
One more question, Mr. Terry. Is a debenture or a corporation's note, is that considered a security?
Yes, I'm assuming that is a security.
And so under the new bill, a corporation could make 12 sales of notes or 10 sales in a 12-month period without registering.
That's correct, if they paid no commissions and they had no public advertising.
Right. Now, would a what you call a sale here, would that include, assuming that the corporation has a note holder who loans the corporation $10,000, during the course of the year he increases that to $15,000. Is that a new sale or is that considered part of the...
No, it's 10 persons. So you could sell to more than one time to one person, so that would not be a new sale. let me back up a little bit. we think in terms of something being issued, if the corporation, say, decides to sell $100,000 worth of notes, they may sell some to you of that group of notes in January, some in February, some in March. Okay, those will be one sale, one person. But if after they issue that group of notes, they turn around and they're going to sell, say, $100,000 worth of stock that's entirely new security, then when they sell to you, that would count as a new sale.
Well, in my own business, I had a couple dozen different investors who had corporate notes for the money they invested. There was no advertising, no commission. As long as I didn't take more than 10 new people a year, then I'd be legal on that.
That's correct, under this bill. Right now, you might very well be violating the law, and that's the concern, that so many people are now violating the law when they sell to a small group, because they don't file a notice with us, and because the law restricts the number of offers. So if you talk to 20 people at a cocktail party, and you sell to three right now, you're in violation of the law.
Well, what if they come to me and say, I'd like to loan you some money?
Well, that's fine. I mean, yeah, that would...
That's not a problem. I've been going around the department for quite a few years, and up until about 10 years ago. They've never said it was wrong, but they've indicated that they think it might be. Thank you.
We're just going to have to keep you out of the bar.
Where they came
to. Oh, actually,
yeah. Yeah, put a question to you.
Thank you all. Questions? We have one more
written.
Tom Higashi, you
want
to say something?
Yes, sir. I'm Tom Higashi, Deputy Corporation Commissioner. What I have is a multi-page document which explains section by section what we think we, what we tried to do and what we think we did. And I go over those sections if you like. Otherwise, I propose merely to submit it at the end to answer questions if you have any.
Okay, it would be my intention to go ahead and allow you to submit it, and then we can have, I would also, I guess, say that we wouldn't pass this bill out today. Unless you want to mention a few words about what comments to, by way of explanation of your, of the summary.
No.
Thank you. Anyone else who's interested in saying something on 2224? Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, right. Senator Simmons, are you satisfied with the bill? Because if you are, I don't mind passing out. I just missed the testimony having come to another meeting. So, Senator Fry?
Well, I'm not really enough to that well acquainted with it at this point in time.
Senator Davis, meeting.
Oh, I'd like to read it over.
Yeah, let's wait. We'll have a...
I imagine.
Session.
Sorry,
lay
that
on. Okay, let's see. Who's who is here? We've got a... we have... I'd like to take up momentarily John Mangus to answer questions on a work session for Senate Bill 17. John Mangus is from the Department of Veterans Affairs. Senator Day, do you have questions of Mr. Mangus? Okay. Okay, are you, John, do you have things to add to Senate Bill 17, or are you here to offer? We asked for information with respect to the specific interest loans.
Let's have that information. The questions that the Senator Day had last time.
Yeah, we need to get that.
What number you got?
17. I want to, Mr. Mangus is going to be gone all next week.
Okay.
And so I wanted to make sure that we have enough information here that we requested of the Veterans issue. Woody did ask for information. They are here to sort of fill us in and...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Mangus, Department of Veterans Affairs. And I realize that Senate Bill 17 was originally scheduled for today, but I appreciate that you added it to your agenda. Originally, when we announced the intention to raise federal interest rates, we had a conference call with the two main rating agencies in New York City, Standard & Poor's and Moody's, and they said that they would wait until after the legislature had adjourned in order for us to come to New York and take part in a rating presentation with the State Treasurer's Office. Since that time, they have contacted the State Treasurer, and they want a report by the Treasurer and talk with Department of Veterans Affairs officials on May 30th. So we will be tying that in with a trip to Washington, D.C. to make the initial drawdown on the Federal Financing Bank loan on the 29th. And then the next day we will be in New York to talk to both Standard & Poor's and Moody's, which will loom quite heavily on any actions we take with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Last time that we were here, we walked through basically all of the amendments that have been addressed and to be attached to Senate Bill 17. There were two additional amendments that were labeled 17-5 and 17-6, and although they were tied to the wrong statute, the wording should have been worked in with 407.325. They both dealt with the variable interest rate and represent an alternative to the ceilings as suggested in 17-7. Basically, removing the ceilings and providing the director with more responsibility in setting the rates. And the one on 17-5 basically is one that I've talked to the Attorney General's office on, that if it were to move this direction, that this would probably be the best for the department. And that wording was to do away with the ceilings on variable increase and add language that if the director determines, comma, at the sole discretion of the director, comma, that such action reduces the probability that invoking provisions of Section 4, Article 11A of the Oregon Constitution will become necessary, would be willing to discuss any of these.
John, I'm sorry. You've got such a soft voice, and I'm getting God Bless America right behind me, and it's a little hard to hear, and I believe in both you and God Bless America, but you'll have to speak a little louder.
Outnumbered by 41 buses.
That's right.
I'll try to speak up, Senator.
Okay, so you think if we're to move in that direction, 17-5 is the best for the department? That's the sense of what you're saying.
That's been as a result of my discussion with the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
And this would do what?
It would actually remove the ceilings as suggested in 17-7 and put more responsibility back on the department.
Well, it would lead you to the discussion without further legislative authority or some trigger mechanism, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
I just want to get the difference between the two. So if we're going to go that direction, then the choice would be 17-5.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, Bill.
Senator,
if you identify yourself, please.
Bill Henderson, Department of Veterans Affairs. last committee meeting, Senator Day raised an interesting question, and that was, what if we didn't raise the 6.2s, that we had to, in fact, work with the 6.7s and the 8.2s? If we were to go with the 1% ceiling scenario, we would be in a box again. So if we go with the new language, which removes the ceiling and places the impetus of which one gets raised and how much on the prudent management of the department and the law, then we'd have more flexibility and we wouldn't end up having to come back again.
Madam Chairman, I understand that thoroughly. You have more flexibility. One of the reasons you find some of those little impediments is that the legislature wants to be involved in this process. And so I understand what the department would like to be free of these shackles, but some of us want to still be part of the political process. That's the difference. It doesn't mean we want to hamstring you, but we may want you to report to us and tell you whether we like your where you're going. That's the difference.
Okay, yeah, I don't want to debate that issue now. We're not in work session, but I want you to go ahead with your... the last time we met, we had a discussion about what if certain types of interest rate increases, what pieces, what if we didn't go up for a percentage? Could you explain these charts that you have here for us before you...
Madam Chairman, the package you just received is a variety of information that has been requested in the past. The first bar chart is simply a graphic presentation of something you'd already heard, and the larger bars are the fund balance. The smaller bars to the right of each bar are the net income. And you can see in the earlier years, 80 through 82, we had retained earnings and we had net income. Then starting in 83, as net income started to go negative, retained earnings started down. And we predict that by fiscal 1986, at this rate, we will actually end up with a zero or negative retained earning position. I had discussed that, but I hadn't shown you anything on it, and that's a really important piece of the puzzle that we're trying to solve. The second sheet is...
Madam Chair.
Senator Otto.
Either the last session or the session before, we heard from Sterrell Austin and some of the others that this negative impact would occur in 1990.
That's different than the cash flow.
I was under the impression that it was also the cash flow. But the effects would occur in 1990. You know, you have it up to 1985.
Madam Chairman, Senator Otto, the cash flow that we showed you goes into the negative in 1990.
It's cash
flow. This is the financial statements, the balance sheet, fund balance, which is like retained earnings in a corporation, will go to zero or go negative in fiscal 86. We are already experiencing two heavy years of net losses and expect this year to be as high as 35 to 40 million in net losses on the income statement. So our problem is both the cash flow problem and the financial statement problem. And that's our solution, addresses both of those at the same time.
But what I want to say is to committee members, this is the cash flow problem, the red, and for those of you who are in the audience, that shows minus 750, it's really down about 100 and some million, 1991, I guess, 1990, right? And then the negative balance is a different one. These are going parallel to each other and going along in tandem with each other is really what they're saying. And that's why fixing the red over here doesn't help us with this problem.
Okay.
The second sheet was in response to a question Senator Day asked. We had given you a schedule of a sampling of loans and how much their payments would go up. He asked us to take a historical look at it, and so of the ones that we've already given you, four of those loans do in fact have a history to them. The first one between the double lines there is a 5.9 loan that was raised to 6.2 on the first line, and then the second line is where the 6.2 will be raised to 7.2. And if you look all the way to the right, you see their old increase was $4, their new increase will be $11.
So So the highest payment increase you have here is $29, is that what you're talking about?
Of the samples that we've given you.
The samples.
See, the samples, what he's tried to do, he's taken some average loans, he's taken samples. What he's telling us is that if we were to take their proposal, mm-hmm. which allows them, as I understand it, use the unused interest plus 1%. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
Unused interest increase you currently have under your authority, plus 1%.
1% above where the loans are today. The
okay.
best example is the third group right there.
All right. You're but talking about 1% above where they are today. Period. That's your solution.
That was the, that's what we modeled.
Okay. I guess what I'm asking you, in your Bill 17, you speak of 1% increase from where you are today, are you speaking 2%, or are you speaking 1% plus the unused authority?
We have modeled a 1% increase from where we are today.
Okay, period.
And what we have asked.
And that's a total fix. That's what you consider a total fix.
Yes.
All right. And these represent where we would go if that happened.
If you raised all of them 1% generally from what you're...